Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day. Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. Don't live your life on hold with online car insurance that's driven to save you time and money.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
Now, the Kinahan-Hutch feud is nearly 10 years old. A brand new book reveals the ruthless hit squads which brought terror to the streets of Dublin during the gang war, which claimed the lives of 18 people. It also details the success of Gardaí in pursuing some of the criminals involved. Now, two journalists from the Irish Sun, Stephen Bream, crime editor, and John Hand, crime correspondent, are co-authors of Kinahan Assassins, and they join us in studio this morning. Welcome, Stephen and John.
Thank you.
Good morning, Albert.
Stephen, I'll start with you first of all. The book essentially kind of describes the different characters, isn't it, that were recruited by the Kinahan organised crime group to carry out their crimes, basically.
Yeah, there are so many different characters in the book, Oliver. On the one hand, you have individuals who had a lot of experience when it came to serious and organised crime. But on the other hand, you have individuals who were essentially vulnerable, who were addicted to drugs. And these are the people that the Kinahans turned to to wage war against the Hutch family. So there are completely different people in there and individuals who were willing to put their lives on the line for the Kinahan organisation.
Extraordinary, sometimes for small money, which we will come to. John, the determination of Gardaí really helps balance out this story so that you can't be glamorising these guys and how they capture them. Tell us who Mr. Nobody is, Declan Brady.
Yeah, well, Declan Brady was a man who on the surface appeared to be someone doing well in life. He was a truck driver, lived in a nice house in County Kildare. But he first came on the Gardaí's radar at David Byrne's funeral. David Byrne, of course, was shot dead at the Regency Hotel. Mm. And Declan Brady appeared wearing cartel colours on the day, essentially, when senior cartel members wore matching designer outfits. And as Gardaí progressed investigations, they found out initially who he was, then started to carry out surveillance. And he was anything but a legitimate businessman. He was, in fact, you know, the Kinahan cartel's head of logistics in Ireland, essentially the cartel's quartermaster. He lived across three different addresses in County Kildare. When he left someone one morning, he would turn up later in the day in a separate outfit. He would take back roads to certain locations just to be careful. He'd engage in counter surveillance, as simple as now. It sounds technical, but that's just looping roundabouts a number of times to see if he's been followed. The initial charges came from a firearms cache being found in an industrial unit in West Dublin, but he was also convicted earlier this year for his role. Again, logistics elements of the murder of the innocent granddad Noel Duckegg Kerwin on the 22nd of December 2016. He's has another long stretch behind bars.
Noel Kerwin had nothing to do with any of this criminal world at all. So he's in the kind of sophisticated end of the scale, really, isn't he? That Mr. Nobody.
Yeah, like he was never involved at the end point of these things. He was, you know, it was always the logistical elements, the firearms, driving people around and so on, but he was never involved in the actual operations on the ground. So he was kind of a step above that kind of foot soldier.
And Stephen, on the other end of that, as you mentioned at the start, they would recruit vulnerable people, people with addiction issues. And one of them was Michael Carroll of Bride Street in Dublin 8.
Yeah, well, Michael Carroll was well known to the Gardaí in the South Inner City. He was someone in the early years of his criminal career would have been involved in street robberies. We did speak to a former detective sergeant who would have engaged with Michael Carroll over the years. Yeah. And he said to me that Carroll was someone, even though he did engage in robberies in various stores and various shops, he was someone who wasn't inherently violent. Right. But yet here he was in 2016 being recruited by the Kinahan organisation simply because he owed a drug debt to one of their senior members. So they recruited him on two different occasions to try and kill a member of the Hutch family and another individual.
And the reason he had a drug debt is his own addiction issues. He's addiction not a dealer or anything like that, is he?
He had addiction issues and he was seen as someone who was expendable. He was classified by Gardaí as a disposable asset to the Kinahan organisation and someone that could be used at their behest to go and kill people. And he was willing to do this because when he did try to kill John Hutch, you know, he was quite reckless and he was intent on killing John Hutch. And even during that incident, he fired 6 shots over a wall where there were women and children in that property as well. So he was quite intent on committing these incidents for the Kinahan organisation.
It's incredibly broad, and there's also the international element to the Kinahan criminal group. An infamous Estonian man, this is Imre Araka, isn't it? He's hired, but Gardaí were on his tail.
Yeah, well, Arrakis is well known in his homeland. He's quite an unusual character. He classifies himself as an actor, as a wrestler. But in the early years living in Estonia, he was someone who fought the Soviets. Mm-hmm. He was engaged in organised crime from a very young age. He was involved in a feud with the Russian mafia and other Estonian criminal organisations in which 100 people died. And Gardaí thankfully got a tip-off in April 2017 that he was on his way to Dublin from Alicante. And as soon as Gardaí got that information, they dispatched a surveillance team to Dublin Airport. And we interview Detective Sergeant Greg Sheehan, who's since retired, and he was part of the surveillance team and told us what it was like to be in the inside and to be on the ground trying to ascertain where Arrakis was going. So he followed him from Dublin Airport into the city centre, where he bought a wig, mm-hmm. and he was seen outside members of the Hutch family living in the north inner city. But then he was then followed to West Dublin, where the Gardaí made the decision the following morning to go into the property and arrest Arrakis, and that's where they uncovered a treasure trove of evidence.
And what did they discover who he was planning to kill?
Yeah, when they entered the property, Arrakis was there in a makeshift bed, and beside the bed there was a note containing the name of James Mago Gately, who was a very senior Hutch associate. And the plan was for Arrakis to travel to Belfast, where Gately was hiding out, to try and kill him. But also the Gardaí discovered a series of messages, a thread of messages detailing the Kinahan organisation's attempts to kill Gately, and that included placing a tracker on his car and using a silencer. So they were discussing ways how they would kill him in Belfast.
It's extraordinary, isn't it, the work of Gardaí. I mean, we think sometimes it's happening in the fringes of society, but these are Gardaí who do this incredibly dangerous job to go into the apartment where there's a contracted hitman there. What ultimately happens to Imre Araka's?
Well, Araka's is arrested just 24 hours after he arrives into Ireland, and he's subsequently charged with conspiring to kill James Gately. He pleads guilty at the Special Criminal Court, and then he receives a 6-year sentence. He serves his time in Ireland before being sent back to Lithuania to stand trial on another matter which he's convicted of. And then just last month, he pleaded guilty to a murder of an MMA fighter in Lithuania as well. Mm-hmm. So he's currently serving time behind bars.
And he's in his 60s, isn't he?
He is. I interviewed him as well for the book just before Christmas. And even I put the questions to him. You had went to the court process and you pleaded guilty, but yet you still deny that you were in Ireland to try and kill James Gately. So A strange character, but someone also who, without question, would think nothing about, you know, taking a human life.
Was he a terrifying person to meet, or are they kind of regular guys?
He was like a granddad. You know, he'd grown his hair long. He was suffering from health issues. He was very softly spoken, very plausible. But still, in the back of your mind, there's that concept that he would kill you at the drop of a hat.
Yeah, wow. John, the surveillance that the Gardaí do is absolutely crucial in all these investigations. They always try to be one step ahead because the gangs are very sophisticated. They have tracking devices, listening bugs. I mean, the guards themselves are quite sophisticated, and they overhear things that the gangs, sometimes very mundane things right next to murder. What sort of things are they overhearing?
Yeah, like the bugging of vehicles give you real insight into the mindset of these people who kind of in one breath are talking about, in one instance, they're talking about a Liverpool game and the next talking about taking human life. It also gives you the insight into the kind of the messiness of these operations. We talk about organised crime but in many of these operations, particularly as the book goes on and as that timeline goes on and certain individuals are taken out along the way, it gets much messier, much kind of lower ranked criminals involved in these operations. You just get an insight into, I suppose, lack of preparation and a lack of experience in carrying out these this sort of work. Stephen, you want to come in?
There's one case there in the book where you have two individuals targeting a former associate of the Kinahan gang, and you get to feel the chaotic nature of this criminal enterprise, where they're talking about, oh, this gun isn't right, and I wanted you to get me the large size glove. What about these poxy gloves? You know, things like that. And talking about, oh, my eyesight's not great. We should have tested this gun out. And then you get a real... the sense of how callous these individuals were when one member of the hit squad says to the other guy, just plug him. You know, if you don't hit him in the head, we don't get paid.
But it also gives you an insight into, I suppose, the money the Kinahan cartel were willing to offer. So in terms of one particular hit, there was discussions of €100,000 between three individuals. Patrick Curtis from the North Inner City, he was the on-the-ground controller of the sub-cell set up to kill Patsy Hutch, a brother of Jerry the Monk Hutch. Mm. And in one conversation, he talked about how they were, the Kinahan cartel were paying up to $20,000 to set up someone, not even to actually strike, I suppose, but just to set up. And then he referenced, you know, how you could pay half the Hutches to set up the other half, you know, and, you know, talking in this way, it's so kind of meaningless to him. You're talking about human life here. Yeah. And it does,
it's just a cash transaction.
Absolutely,
basis going
on.
I mean, the numbers are quite big at the beginning of the feud, aren't they? But as desperation sort of hits the Kinahans, the figures get smaller and smaller, sometimes extraordinarily low, as low as €2,000.
Well, I suppose €2,000 was paid. Now, that was for Kieran O'Driscoll, who was the looker. He was from the North Inner City again. He was employed to basically stand in Champions Avenue. And when that hit team carried out their ploy to draw Patsy Hutch from his home, he was to make a phone call.
He's a lookout.
Yeah. But and the thing about Kieran O'Driscoll was, again, when we talk about addicts and so on, he was an addict, but he was someone who grew up with his grandmother on Champions Avenue, the same area where Patsy Hutch lived. And again, he was handed just €2,000 in the heartland of Hutch territory, Hutch family, you know, where they all live. He was willing to turn on the family just to play this kind of, and it sounds unimportant, but it is actually a pivotal role if that operation was to be successful, because he was to call when Patsy Hutch was drawn out of his home, and he'd the hit team would then come and strike.
It's almost bureaucratic in nature, some of the discussions, even down to what expenses they're going to get for carrying out a murder.
Yeah, like in terms of that Patsy Hutch plot, there was an expense set aside, I think about €10,000. It just shows you the money. I suppose the Kinahan cartel's power came from their wealth.
Yes.
And I suppose this book is about how, no matter how much money they were willing to throw at different operations, the Gardaí actually, the Gardaí nullified it, because they were there, they were listening to them, and that's what this story tells.
There's great cooperation with the PSNI as well in this regard, isn't
it? And internationally as well, especially when Arrakis was concerned. But it shows too how reckless these individuals were, how determined they were as well, and how ruthless they were, and placed no value on human life whatsoever. But it shows you that Gardaí were resilient and determined to continue these investigations and to dismantle different structures within the criminal organisation. Yeah.
So a majority of the criminal Kinahan group, is it fair to say, they're in prison? They cracked quite a few of those. Obviously, the guys at the very top we know are outside the country. How likely are we to see the likes of Daniel Kinahan being extradited after this new treaty has been signed?
I think it's a very positive step, and one that will be welcomed by the Gardaí. This is a step that again involves international cooperation, and this is something that former Assistant Commissioner John O'Driscoll, who sadly passed away recently, he laid the foundations for the Gardaí to have liaison officers overseas. And because of this treaty, then we've already seen recently developments with the cartel leadership, one of them being arrested in Dubai, now facing extradition to Ireland.
That's the first test, that's Sean McGovern.
And then you have also senior figures recently as well, Liam Byrne, Thomas Kavanagh, being sentenced as well for their role in various cartel activities.
They were sentenced in Britain.
That's correct, yes. So the next stage would be, if it's possible, as the investigations continue, to try and get Daniel Kinahan back to Ireland.
Yes, and so the test really is the Sean McGovern case, isn't it? Because he's been arrested. He was named in the Special Criminal Court earlier this year. He's been one of the leaders of the gang, arrested in Dubai. He's a wanted man here. Is that, how is that going to go? How long should it take for him to be extradited back here?
I think
if it's a success,
it could take a number of months, because I think the Gardaí are looking at other cases in Dubai where he has an opportunity to appeal his arrest in Dubai, and how long could that take? But other cases we've seen where individuals connected to organised crime have received bail, but then they've gone on the run. So each case is treated differently, so it's up to them.
And I suppose it's a step into the unknown for us, but that arrest adds huge, I suppose, heat on the overall cartel.
Very good.
It took about 10 to 15 years for the cartel to build up its wealth and its power. And it's probably going to take overall that time to take it fully down. But its key pillars have been taken out of this organisation, which has been set up to, in a way, to protect its very hierarchy. And that's key pillars like Bomber Kavanagh, Liam Byrne, have been taken down.
And can you remind us what they were convicted of again? Because it's fascinating, isn't it?
They were convicted this week of essentially a plot to place firearms in a location in Northern Ireland to get a lesser sentence for Bomber Kavanagh, who was up in prison at the time. And he was facing charges of drug trafficking, which he actually pleaded guilty to. But he wanted to essentially get this sub-cell gang he created, which he was kind of overseeing from prison through an associate in prison, to place these firearms so he could tell the NCAA of their location in a bid to get a reduced sentence.
He wanted to make it appear like he was going to play ball with the authorities.
Absolutely.
As an informer.
Yeah.
But he was able to arrange all of this from prison.
Yeah.
And the amount of loose guns they just have hanging around that they could put in a field somewhere.
Well, I suppose the insight into the case this week was how unstructured and how under pressure this kind of gang was to get these firearms, and how they were just struggled to get firearms over a period of time. But what was really striking was, despite Bomber Kavanagh being behind bars, he was sentenced to 21 years for drug trafficking 2 years ago. They were still talking about how he was going to crack heads, you know, that fear that he instilled in these people on the ground, despite him serving a very long sentence behind bars. It just shows you his power.
You mentioned the fear that they can put into their associates, and that's their currency, isn't it, Stephen? When you have a book like Kinahan Assassins as a hooded character with a gun on the front of it, are you in danger of kind of helping them instill that sort of image they like to portray of themselves as being men of fear? And
well, I think when you look at the amount of people who have lost their lives at the hands of the Kinahan organisation, you're dealing with a transnational global organisation who deal in death and deal in drugs and deal in weapons importation. So we're not sugarcoating anything in relation to the Kinahan organisation. This is what they do. This is their business. It's the business of drugs and death. So we have to reflect the reality of what they've engaged in. And, you know, the book also refers to the innocent people who've lost their lives.
Yeah.
Because of this criminal organisation, people like Trevor O'Neill and Martin O'Rourke, completely innocent, Noel Curran as well. So life means nothing to them. So the book reflects a very difficult period and challenging period for Gardaí and even for society at that time, when you think of the amount of people who lost their lives in a short space of time. You know, this wasn't Republican paramilitaries or any troubles. This is related to organised crime, bringing mayhem onto the streets.
It was every week, wasn't it? And the tit for tat and just the extraordinary violence and the threat to innocent people who unfortunately do get caught up.
Yeah, well, when you look at when the Regency Hotel happened, just 3 days later, Gerry Hutch's brother Eddie is shot dead. And then you go into March, another Hutch relative, April, May, and then you have Martin O'Rourke gunned down in a street in Sheriff Street, simply going about his business. Another vulnerable young man, totally innocent, not involved in anything. And it just continued. And even when you look at the prolific nature of this feud, it even happened in Spain. And I remember interviewing Trevor O'Neill's widow Suzanne, and she said that she didn't have to tell her children what had happened to their father because they were there, they witnessed it. Like they were kids when the Kinahan organization sent a hitman to Spain to kill a member of the Hutch family, and because Trevor O'Neill was walking close by, didn't even know this Hutch relative, he was shot in the back and killed. So that's the people we have to remember as well, I think, during this feud.
Absolutely. You've been covering this beat for a long time, Stephen. Is it worse than ever?
It keeps changing, Oliver, the crime. There's so many different strands to crime. And I've been doing this for 20 years. I've always been fascinated by the news. And look, I lost my own father in a violent incident. And I think it's important to reflect the views of victims and to give them a platform if they choose or if they want to share their stories. So that's what we will be primarily focusing on, are the victims. And that's reflected in the book as well by some of the people we've spoken to.
Is your dad's story the reason you cover crime?
No, well, I was covering, I always liked news, and of course crime is a strand of news. So, but when I lost my father, when he was killed in London in 2002, I was working in the newspaper then in the Sunday life in Northern Ireland. So yeah. I think it's just because I was in that position, then I got to meet so many different people. People here are a lot worse off than me. And I've met some, in coming to Dublin, I've met some fantastic families who all they want is just, if the media can assist in sharing their stories, it helps them. So we're willing to assist that.
Okay, I don't know that story, but I'm sure you maybe told it before, have you, about your dad?
Yeah, no, I wrote a piece before about it, but it takes time, Oliver, for people to talk about, you know, losing a loved one through a violent action. And I've written about it publicly and I've no problem speaking about
it. Was it a random criminal? A
completely unprovoked incident when he was in London. He was working there at the time and just out with a friend, and some kind of row and altercation took place, and then he was stabbed in the chest and lost his life. So it's just when you're thrown into that situation, then you have to adapt. So that's what I did. And I think it helped me being in the media, where I was able to deal with, you know, the press interest. So, and that's where I think it's why I think it's important, where as journalists, John and I, and crime journalists, and John does the same as well, you know, we do a lot of work with different groups and families.
But it's vocational, isn't it? Because that your dad is one of the innocent people caught up on the fringes of presumably what is the wider crime problem that emanates from these gangs, essentially.
Yeah, it was just a totally unprovoked incident, and an innocent person has got caught up in this. So yeah, when I'm writing about other families, you have that in the back of your mind as well. Yeah. So, and you can't intrude, or you have to show dignity and have a bit of empathy with them as well, which is important. So, but I do think that experience that I've been through helps me engage with so many different families, and you get to meet so many brilliant people who are a lot worse off, but fantastic people who just want to share their stories.
Absolutely. John Hand, you could have written about politics or pop stars or anything.
I find crime fascinating, investigations and the insights, particularly this book. I suppose my career in journalism started in 2015 and it's kind of coincided with the Kinahan Cartel story. To just follow it all the way has been fascinating.
It's a nice balance because you cover the good guys as well. People like John O'Driscoll, who you mentioned, he was assistant commissioner, devoted his life, really, didn't he, his whole career to this. It's called Kinahan Assassins. It's published by Penguin Books, co-authored by Stephen Breen and John Hand. Thanks, gentlemen. Talk to you again.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Email oliver@rte.ie.